A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Wild Ginger Wedding YouTube channel, live broadcast, or subsequent podcast. Today, we are talking to expert navigator Sean Bolland, aka the Nav Guy. He has won the elite class at the prestigious navigation event, the OM, which is called the Original Mountain Marathon, and he delivers navigation workshops for the OM too. He's going to help us get better at navigation while we do our trail and ultra running today. So he's going to give us 3 top tips and possibly a few more. So Sean, thank you so much for joining us today. Have you been navigating today already, or will that come later in the day?
Later in the day possibly, but I've just navigated my way down to the train station to drop my son off. He's getting a train out back down to Coventry, where he lives.
Oh, really? I'm from there.
Oh, are you? Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Is he at uni there?
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Oh, is he at uni there?
Oh, no, sorry, no. He lives with his mum down there.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Nice.
But so not been out today, no. I've actually not been out since Sunday. I did Sedbergh Hills fell race on Sunday. Absolutely destroyed after that. And the only thing I'm going to make it to is a yoga session this week to try and straighten myself out after doing the Sedbergh Hills race. So it's it's 14 miles, not that long, I suppose, but I really struggled in it.
Yeah, well, it just depends how hard you push yourself, don't you? If you've pushed yourself really hard, then yeah, you're going to hurt afterwards. And did you have to navigate as well on that race?
Well, not really, no, because the joys of being in the midfield is that you can just follow the people ahead, can't you?
Wonderful, well, yeah.
Sedbergh Hills, you can do, absolutely. You know, if it's claggy conditions, if the mist comes in, then and you don't have anybody in sight above, then it is one that you do need to either know the course really well or get the old map and compass out and try and follow your keep yourself on track.
Well, congratulations on doing that race. I am quite interested to know how, like, before we dive into all the mistakes that we're all making with our nav and what it really takes to improve, can we sort of wind the clock back a bit to just tell us how you got into running and into navigation? Like, what came first, the nav or the running?
Well, both at the same time, I would say.
Okay.
So I've been running on the trails in the hills for over 40 years, which when I say that, I think, wow, that's a long time.
Really? It is
a long
time. You don't look that old, just for anyone watching on YouTube. You look about 40 to me.
That's very kind of you to say that.
Yeah.
But I turned 50 this year, so I'm now about 50.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have had you down at 50.
And I started out orienteering as a kid.
Ah.
So I started tearing competitively when I was 8.
Oh, wow. So was it kind of a family thing then?
Yeah. A lot of people at my sort of era that got into orienteering, it was sort of a family-ish type sport. And, you know, quite a lot of travelling involved. But that's where it all came from. And I did a lot of orienteering competitively as a youngster, and then as a teenager into my very early 20s. And then switched more to fell running for various different reasons. I just enjoyed that sport a bit better. So that interest in navigation was there right from the start. You know, orienteering is a great sport. It really is proper navigation, map reading, and it's a great skill to have. It was a great skill to have as a kid, in that it, you know, makes you sort of aware, you know, it's able to read maps, read plans, which for my work in the past has been quite helpful. And that's where, for me, that's where it all started. But at the same time, I was also a very keen runner. So in the local athletic club, cross country, sneaking onto the fell a little bit as a youngster as well. So the two there went together. Mm-hmm. So I've always been keen on navigation and maps and all that sort of stuff. And I've carried it through right the way into adulthood. And I've started, over the past 5 years or so, I started doing navigation courses because, you know, there's a lot of background knowledge. I've done various mountain marathons in the past. And what I've found is that there's a lot of people out there that just don't quite have the basics, which, you know, and it doesn't take that long to get your head around them, to get a bit of basic expertise nailed. And then, you know, it really opens up the mountains for you, you know.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, you can do a lot more. I think you'll find a lot of people that go into the hills, you know, they go to the same places, what have you, but, you know, with the basic skills, you can really broaden the horizon.
Yeah, and route planning is one of my favorite things to do. I don't know if you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, there's a map behind me of my local area, and I often use it just to plan local routes and things. And I love looking at maps and I love planning routes. I'm quite intrigued, before we get on to these, you've hinted there at what we might, what kind of easy little things we might start doing to get basic nav going, but I'm intrigued about the ARM, the original mountain marathon. So you've won the elite class at the ARM, which not only requires like running about 26 miles but navigating really proficiently on the move as well, so you're more than qualified to be talking to us today here. When did you start moving into the mountain marathon side of things, and yeah, did you start with like the D category and work up to elite, or did you, yeah, were you always just like, right, I'm just going to go for elite?
Well,
I've done orienteering for ages.
Yeah, I mean, I was always confident on the navigation side. And I was mainly into sort of, say, I got more into fell running. And certainly, you know, in years gone by, in the fell running scene, you know, you'd focus on the championship races. And then at the end of the season, heading into winter, you'd have the ARM. And a lot of people would then just simply do the ARM. I was always keen to have a go. I mean, going back a bit, even before that, really. But the first mountain marathon I ever did was, I was only about 12. I think I did this thing called a Capricorn, which is a mini mountain marathon. So I'd done a few very early on, but then I never actually done an ARM itself. I just, for whatever reason, I never actually got around to doing it. So the first one I did was, just went straight into the elite class.
Why not?
So
that's what
my advice is, you know, best advice is really just to sort of start on the low, on the B class, or even a medium score.
Yeah, I did the D class one year when there was D's in one of them. I can't remember if it was the Hegloss Highlander or the Lamb, when the Lamb was still going. I'm sure I've done a D, just like
right, well,
walking around a few of them.
Yeah,
and
well,
sleeping
great,
in a
yeah.
huge tent.
Oh, you had to carry with you, obviously, as well. Yeah, so you got the extra weight on board. But yeah, I think, you know, just for me, I was quite happy to go straight into the elite class. I was running quite well at the time, you know. I was in my 30s, you know, good old days when you got less injuries and what have you.
less children, sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah, all things come along. So I went straight into the elite class. But I think for most people, I think, you know, just sort of take bite-sized chunks. If you're a bit nervous about the navigation, just start at the bottom one and get one under your belt, and then you think, wow, that was quite easy, quite enjoyed that, and then you can move up a category and just sort of keep going if you want, and then, you know, get up to A or possibly elite class or the long score.
Yeah, it's a really nice project, isn't it, navigation, because once you've got, you know, like if you've done a few trail runs and ultra runs, and you're looking for to make it a bit more interesting, looking for that next step, maybe navigation is a really nice sort of sidestep, because it can open up a whole different world of races to you. But in your, because so you've set up the Nav Guy and you do a lot of work with like Mountain Run, The Arm, and in your many years of experience coaching, are there, have you come across like, say, a few major just common mistakes that you see runners making time and time again? Are there things that people just always do?
There is, yeah, there's a few ones, yeah. which the kind of things that everybody probably already knows about, so we'll, but you know, and it's always,
I
worthwhile.
Don't know though, if people are, well, really new to Nav, then they might not know, like they might not, like I know people, I've worked in offices before where people don't even know what the blue lines mean, you know, like that's a river, like they don't even know what that means on a map, so yeah, people could be listening to this who have never even looked at a map and they just run on roads before.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would say, you know, the one thing to take away from any course I would do and take away from this chat here today is that whenever you look at your map, to make sure it is orientated, or to make sure it is the right way up, different ways of saying it, pretty much the same thing. I think what I found is that a lot of people, when they go out onto the trails or go out to the hills, they get a map. They'll have a map and they'll think, right, okay, I just want to see where I am, and they'll have it so that it's like they're reading it like a book, so the place names are going upwards, because you can sort of see the logic in that. But as we know, the map is a representation of what's on the ground, and it needs to relate to what is on the ground, so it needs to be orientated.
Yeah, so like turn it round so that, like, not so that north and the writing's all the right way up, but just so that you're pointing the right way on the map. So like if there's a stream there, you want that on the left in real life and on the map at the same time.
Absolutely, that's what it is. So that representation on the ground is, you need to relate the features that are on the map to what's on the ground. And as you say, you know, if you've got a really big obvious feature, like there's a lake over there, well, you can line it up so that the map has the lake over there, that mountain there, a road here, and then you can actually start to make sense of the map then. It is incredibly difficult to try and use a map when it's not orientated, and that's where people get totally thrown. So
yeah, and do you know what really annoys me about orientating the map is, like, that's the first basic rule of navigation, but when you go to like these country parks and things like that, they'll have a locator map on a big signpost or on a board, and it will have a lovely map that somebody's illustrated. My husband illustrates maps exactly like that, and then they'll put it on the board and they'll be like, you are here, and it's not orientated at all to the path that people are going to be taking. So you've then got to do this mental gymnastics as to, so I'm here and that's there and that's there, and you've got to, it's just really, that was one of my bugbears in life actually, isn't people not orientating the map, because obviously there's a few around the place and they don't want to be bothered like changing it around and stuff. But that's really annoying, I find, because, well, I'm not very good at navigating, so that would just really help me out.
I like the term there, mental gymnastics, which, you know, you're absolutely right, and I know what you're saying, you've got to be quite good really to be able to mentally turn it all around and then be able to use the information. With a bit of paper it's a bit easier, so to avoid those mental gymnastics, make sure your map's orientated, make sure it's the right way up. And I think what throws a lot of people with this real basic thing is that if they then orientate the map and it's sort of upside down or partially upside down, the fact that the place names are upside down, I think people just get thrown by that, because you're so used to reading a magazine.
Yeah, you think it's wrong, don't you, for the place names are upside down.
So there we go. That's one thing that that's the first thing you do whenever you have a look at the map, make sure it is orientated. And you know, it's funny really, we say this to people and you know, it makes a lot of sense. I think, oh yes, that's a good idea. And then people will do it. Okay, right, yeah, just, you know, you can line that up with that and that's all looking good. But then, like, you know, the following day or a few hours later, or people will still revert back looking at it the right way up. So you know, even though you can say these things and explain these things, I think, you know, it really is, it's some people then, for whatever reason, they just sort of like stop doing it. So I think it's keeping it going and just saying to yourself, if you are going to navigate, if you are going to do a mountain marathon or wherever, then you've really got to nail that one and get it get it bottomed out.
So would you say that's the most important thing of all then, just making sure the map is turned round in the right direction to the direction that you're going?
I would say so, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. It does make sense.
At the same time, whenever you do orientate the map, I would also say use your compass as well to make sure it actually is the right way up. Because, you know, what can happen is that you can say, okay, right, there's a nice ridge over there, and there's a nice path coming down there, and you can think, okay, you could line it all up, but you might be lining up the wrong things.
Okay, yeah.
So, and this is, you know, particularly when it's misty, it can happen quite easily. So whenever you look at the map, make sure it's orientated, and an even better one is use your compass just to double check that it actually is the right way up. And quite often that can just nip a lot of mistakes in the bud.
Yeah, or you could be doing like a 180 degree error. I've done that before where I've you know, there's similar things on each side and you've gone like backwards instead of forwards. Held the map completely the wrong way around.
How far did you go when you did that 180
degree error? I've done it many times. I couldn't possibly go in. But that's a really good one. And I'm pleased that you've brought the compass up so early into the chat, because I think that people really get scared about using a compass as well, because they think, oh, it's got a turny dial, it's got all these numbers on it, it's all what's bearings, oh no, like that. But all you're really doing is just checking that if north is, say, pointing that way on the compass, that the lines on your map are also pointing that way, and that means you've got it held the right way round. It's probably easier if people go on one of your courses to actually learn about this, because if you're listening on the podcast or watching us on YouTube, it might even still be alien to you what we're talking about. So I do advise people go on one of your courses. I think that just using that compass to check whether north should be that way, you know, if you're wanting to go south on your map, check that you are actually, that is a path going south. Don't know if I've expressed that in the right way, but yeah, I think
you just need to use the
arrow bit of the compass. You don't have to look at all the numbers.
I mean, you did say quite a thing. People will see a compass. I mean, here's a silver Type 4 compass here, and you know, you've got the bezel, the spinny bit, and you've got numbers all around the side. You've got all sorts of markings on it.
Yeah, and it's confusing. It looks like a really complicated bit of kit.
It does, and you can do all sorts with it. But the thing that you're doing most of the time is using the floaty red needle, the magnetic needle, shows north, and using that to orientate your map. So to get all those basics nailed, we don't necessarily need to use the rest of it. We just need to use that magnetic needle. Don't be fazed by all the other bits of detail. You know, you've got roamers, you've got scales, you've got cutout bits, you've got all sorts on there. I'm holding that one quite close, you can see there's all sorts on there.
And
there's a little circle, there's a cutout circle there that you can use to mark up maps. And then have you got one of these compasses?
I used to, but I've actually got a much more simpler, I've got a simpler one now, just for a fiver, just for emergency use, for, you know, mandatory kit.
Yeah,
and it's got the numbers on and a little magnifying glass, but it's just, I just use it for the north raid, basically.
Yeah.
I've rarely had to take a bearing in a fell race. I mean, sure. In a trail race. They're usually way marked. Bearings was for when I used to do hiking, which I now just speed up and call it running.
So, yeah, so that, you know, you don't want to be fazed by all the detail on there. And there is all sorts on there. I mean, on this one, you've got, there's this sort of little dimple here in the top left-hand corner. I never knew what that was for.
Yeah.
Fairly recently.
What is it for?
It silver, been making compasses for many decades. And they've got a background in the military as well, because obviously, you know, particularly during the Cold War, things were heating up a little bit, so pre-GPS devices, and there was certain military versions of the Silver Type 4 that had, I think, radioactive paint on some of the markings.
Oh.
And it was some kind of radioactive warning or something like that.
Oh,
but,
okay.
And so it's just like, what the point being really is that it's completely of no use to us as trailers.
Yeah.
It's another example of a bit excessive stuff on something like this that you don't necessarily need for basic things, but when it comes to traveling.
So just the north arrow, just to check that you're going in the right direction that you want to be going.
I would say so most of the time, and that's why I quite like these compasses, you know, these wrist compasses, where you've got all you've got there is a big fat needle, really. Not much else, because you know you don't necessarily need much else.
And that goes on your wrist, does it? That looks really handy, because
it does. And well, the other thing about this is that this has got the Silver's jet needle on it, which is basically bigger than the other one, and it's more stable. So from a running point of view, and you know a lot of the people on here will be interested in running, we're moving quicker over terrain, aren't we? We're running, we're bouncing around a little bit, so that needle can just sort of float about and dance around a little bit as a runner. But the jet needle, still do, is it's a bigger magnet basically, and it's more stable when you're running. So it's a good one to carry. So you can get those jet needles on a base plate compass, which I've got the back version of that one as well. But the wrist one here is quite nice for certain things, and you can just sit over your wrist like that, and you can be running along, and
it just sort of sits there.
It sits there, great. So that your map stays the right way up, and you can thumb the map a bit easier, which we'll maybe mention in a moment. And so there we go, really. So I suppose the one thing I like to say to people is that, you know, there is more than one type of compass, and it's quite handy to have one of these, maybe have a base plate compass as well. You know, you can really sort of go to town, buy yourself some extra Christmas presents, and have more than one type of compass.
I'll link up to those in the film description below, and in the podcast show notes as well. So if anybody wants to get their hands on one of those, I'll just put the links in there.
I suppose one thing I would say is to think about your compass as a piece of kit. You know, when you get into trail running, a lot of runners, like, you know, you're starting out on something like parkrun, you've got a pair of trainers, and you know that's fine, and then you start to venture off roads, well, maybe like in a set of trail shoes, and then before you know it, you maybe you've got three sets of shoes, which at the start of getting into running seems really extravagant, but it's not really, sort of, you know, the different things, and you can only wear one set of shoes at any time, so you're not really wasting money. Same with the compass, think of it as a piece of kit. You'd have maybe more than one, and so long as you don't lose it, it'll generally sort of last quite a long, well, you know, long enough, and you can have the benefit of having the right thing at the right time.
Well, that sounds great. I might get myself one of those wider jet needles, because I've never realized about that, the smaller needle like moving around while I run. So yeah, that would be a good thing to do as well. And you mentioned thumbing the map as well, so would that be like your tip number two
absolutely. So I mean, it depends which map that we've got in a, if you're doing a race or an event like a mountain marathon, or even a, you know, one of the ultras where you have to navigate your own way, you've got an official race map. But if you're doing your own thing, you might have a paper map, and you know, when you open it out, you've got, let's just use this one here, let's just say you've opened it out, you've got quite a big area, and or you can orientate your map, get it the right way up, and you can see where you are, and then you can sort of, you know, sort of start to choose your route. But the trouble is, whenever you go to look at the map again, you've got to go through that whole process again of finding where you are. So particularly as a runner, having your thumb marking your position and having the route that you're following ahead of you is a really useful thing to do. And so to do that, you need to fold your map up so that you're able to get your thumb into the right place. So on this one here, let's just say I've just done that. I've folded the map up. I'm actually at this point here, and I'm heading off further on that way. I can then run, no problem. And when I come to look at the map, I can, the thumb's marking a position, so I don't need to find myself all on the map again. I can just see where I am and just move your thumb along a little bit as you're following your route.
Fantastic.
So, thumbing the map, I think, is you know, really, really important. And as you move along the route, obviously you're going to need to refold your map, and real sort of map geeks like me get quite interested in like, you know, oh, I'm going to have a new fold in a minute as I'm getting further along the route.
Yeah.
Sad, really, but nevertheless, you know, it is part of it really, because you need to be able to get your thumb to mark your position, and then you need to have sufficient map for the bit that you're following so you can navigate it properly, and also maybe just get a sneaky view of the bit further on. But having the thumb on the map means that you don't need to find yourself. And I think this is where a lot, it's another common issue really, that we talked about, you know, at the start, in that if you don't thumb the map, you've got to find yourself on the map again, and it's a real big faff. So as you start to get tired, you think, well, I can't be bothered doing that. So you don't bother doing that, and then you go off course and you get a bit lost and all that, and then you start to think, oh, I'm a rubbish navigator. But if you can just sort of keep with it, thumbing the map, you'll avoid all that sort of stuff, and it'll really bring you on loads. So yeah, simple thing, but very effective.
Yeah, so we've got two really good tips there. We've got holding the map the right way round so that you can, so you're going the direction that the map is facing or pointing, and then you've got to put your thumb on where you are on the map. So you're being your own sat nav, aren't you? Really, you're using your thumb as the sat nav bit. Whereas the sat nav will just tell you immediately where you are. You're using that thumb and you're kind of moving it along where you're going. That's two really good tips. Have you got a third quick and easy tip for us?
A third quick and easy tip. Well, I would say I'm going to ask a question like this. I'll ask you a question. If you were to pick up this map here, which is a OS 1 to 25,000 map, would you know how far 1 centimetre is on that map on the ground?
250 metres, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, yeah. Great. Now, the reason why it's, you know, I would say to the third tip really would be like just understand the map scale.
Do you know what? When I used to do orienteering, point one always used to get me because you hadn't got your head into the scale yet, because the maps were sort of different scales, weren't they, for different events and different places sometimes.
That's right.
Well, I was at school, so I wasn't particularly sensible about these things, and I just used to hair off and thinking oh, it's over there, and actually it would be like much sooner or much further than I thought. So the scale is a really good tip.
That's what you've just said there is probably what most people would do, in that as you start to use a particular whatever map that you picked up, whether it's orienteering or marathon or an on survey map, is that you sort of start to get used to the scale,
yeah,
but without really thinking about it. So what I would say is ask yourself the question, do you know what 1 millimeter equals on that map? And do you know what 1 centimeter equals?
Yeah.
And so that, if you do, then you've got your head around the scales. And
yeah.
I would say that is a useful thing. I think in terms of mountain marathon, generally using 1 to 40,000 maps, to an Harvey, which is a Harvey's base, usually a Harvey's base map in a mountain marathon, or even a lot of the ultras like the Dragon's Back, they usually use 1 to 40 Harvey's base maps, which is a different map scale to the OS 1 to 25,000 ones that most people are probably more familiar with.
Yeah, like to say that exact point there, because I'm really used to using the OS maps, 1 to 50 or 1 to 25,000, and so when I get on a race and I'm given a Harvey map, I'm immediately like completely discombobulated because I'm not used to it. Like the Bob Graham map is a Harvey map as well, isn't it? And I'm going to go and do some Wrecking of the Frog Graham next weekend, and it's a Harvey map that I'm going to be sent, and I'm just like, oh no, not a Harvey map, I'm not used to them, and it's got all different colours on it, and the contour lines are 15 metres apart, so it's harder to count them. So yeah, I'm glad you've brought that up.
Yeah, so I get that one nailed, which is understand the scales. And so I mean, you said that on a 1 centimeter on a 1 to 25,000 map is 250 meters, and the quick and easy way to remember is when we talk about 1 to 25,000, we've got 1 colon 25,000, 1 millimeter equals 25 meters on a 1 to 25,000 map, and you can just do the quick mental maths from there. So if you then switch into a 1 to 40,000 map, 1 millimeter equals 40 meters. 1 centimeter equals
400 meters. So why do they do those different scales? I mean, why doesn't Harvey just go, oh, 1 to 50 is a thing, let's do 1 to 50? Why have they settled on 1 to 40,000? Because it's not in the middle, is it, of 25? It's not exactly in the middle of 25.
It's a little bit closer to 1 to 50,000.
Yeah.
And, well, they used to call it the magic scale, didn't they? In that And it's just about how to present information, I suppose. Back in the day, you know, when I was sort of going out to the hills, if you were to just grab a map, most likely it wouldn't be an explorer map. It would be an OS Land Ranger map, the 1 to 50,000 ones, which is the pink ones.
Yeah.
Which, right, I don't know if you've ever used one of these recently, but they're actually quite a lot harder to use because there's less detail on there, because it's that smaller map scale.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got to be sort of quite handy, really, to be able to use these successfully.
And they don't have all the paths on either.
They don't have all the paths on. They don't have walls, fences. Yeah.
Especially in the Lake District.
It's all the time. There's fewer streams on there. It is definitely a bit trickier using these fellas. But into the 90s, the OS then started to expand the coverage of the explorers, and now you've got full national coverage of these ones. So these are the go-to maps that people use now, and there's loads of detail on these ones.
Yeah.
But if there's a downside to these ones, I'd say there's maybe too much detail.
Yeah.
So what you've got is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Too much.
Mm-hmm.
So Harvey sort of slid in the middle somewhere and said, "You know, we'll go for 1 to 40,000." And their maps generally, the information, the data is presented a bit more simply, so it's clearer to read. So even though it's in the middle, but a bit closer to 1 to 50,000, it is because the data is, you know, a bit more. They just give you what you need to navigate, whereas the OS tend to give you all sorts
of everything. On OS, they're serving everything. They're not specifically for sport, are they? Whereas Harvey's more of
they call them
the super walker and everything, don't they? So they're designed for hill walkers and runners, and they make specific race maps as well. So
that's it. Yeah,
they're putting on the things we need to see. So maybe I should get more involved with them. But I I do find it really easy, much easier to count a 10-meter contour than a 15. Like the maths to do the 15 meter contour when you're tired is a lot harder than 10, don't you think?
I
just need to get better at maths?
I do. You know, that's, you know, it's one of these things. They've decided that 15 meter contour intervals on a Harvey's map give you sufficient data to be able to see the shapes and the relief, but without overloading the eye with too much detail. But it means you get a little bit less information. And yes, the mental maths when you're tired and you're knackered, it's a bit hard. I quite like just 10 meters interval, and I think that's about the right sort of balance. But you know, they've gone for the 15 meter interval, and it's just weighing up which is the best one.
I suppose you get used to it, don't you? If you use Harvey maps a lot, then you get used to them.
You do, yeah. And I think what I found is that when you then switch back to OS 1 to 25,000 map in the mountains, you think, wow, there's so much info here that it's like...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, it's a bit overloaded. I actually think, it was a bit easy just having the info that you need to have, as opposed to all the extra stuff on there. Personally... I like both. At the end of the day, I'm a bit of a map geek, I suppose. But if I'm out running in competition, I definitely prefer Harvey's maps. So if I was to grab a map to go out for a run in the lakes, I'd probably go for Harvey's. But if I'm out walking with the group, I quite often take walking groups out. You know, we're going really steady away. We're stopping for pictures. We're stopping for lunch breaks.
Sounds like my running.
Well, in those sort of situations, I quite like extra detail on the map. You know, things like on an OS map, you've got like loads more place names. Now, you don't need to know. I mean, every outcrop in the Lake District has got a name, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's all historical. And we don't need to know it, but it's quite nice to know. You know, that obscure little peak. I'm not talking about the main mountains or the Wainwrights, but just obscure little places.
Yeah.
And
ruins and things, like they put like cairns and like old earthworks and things. You can kind of get a bit of a sense of the history through the OS map, can't you?
I think you can.
So better for guiding than actually like bombing through it as fast as you can.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, and that's so I like, you know, I like to use books, and we're quite fortunate, aren't we, really, in that we've got a choice in these things. You know, in Britain, you've got like super duper maps. Really, have, you know, we're spoiled for choice, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever go out to other countries trail running, but, you know, I mean, some places have got reasonably okay maps, but, you know, a lot of places you go to, they're rubbish compared to the US maps, really, but some are okay. And, you know, we've got this really, really good choice. Which is fantastic. And we've got that full national coverage. Well, full national coverage, certainly as far as the OS is concerned.
Yeah.
Harvey, obviously, they tend to cover the national parks, some of the areas of outstanding natural beauty, or the hilly areas, basically. So if you're based way, you know, away from the hills, you haven't necessarily got Harvey's maps on your doorstep. That's one of the downsides of Harvey's, really, but it's certainly in the mountains. That splendid choice.
But Harvey's do particular routes, don't they? Like, I'm sure they've probably got like a Yorkshire Three Peaks route, and they've got the Bob Graham route, and they've probably got the Wainwrights route. They do route maps. They've got a Frog Graham map as well.
Yeah, which is really handy.
Yeah, and they highlight it on in yellow. It's absolutely
brilliant. Highlight on, there's a few little top tips. Yeah, and so that the Bob Graham one has really been useful. And I think they have tweaked it every now and then, because that sort of trod that everybody uses does change on certain little bits. But it's really convenient, I would say. Yeah, so instead of wrestling with maps and pouring everything together more prepared, you've just got the bits that you need, and you've got a nice big yellow highlighter line to follow.
Yeah, it's so handy.
It is really handy. So if anybody's, you know, thinking of attempting a Bob Graham, I would get one of them. And the same with the other ones. You know, the Paddy Buckley, they've got the same versions, and some of the long distance routes as well. I think Harvey's have got these bespoke maps, and you can save quite a bit of cash as well. So instead of buying loads of different sheets,
and cutting them out and highlighting your own thing on, just get that one,
and it does the biz. And usually they're printed on, well, in fact, they're all printed on waterproof paper, so you don't have to worry about them getting wet and or disintegrating before your eyes when you're actually out on the trail.
Yeah, because the OS maps are made of proper paper, aren't they? Unless you get a laminated one.
They're really thick, aren't they?
Yeah, and they don't bend properly. You know, like to thumb the map, you end up with an aching hand because you're trying to clamp it down. I've had to use hair bubbles in the past to sort of tie them down and then hold them like that. Or elastic bands, you know. I've just remembered, with the 1 to 50,000 maps, I used to use them for hiking in Scotland, because there's less in Scotland. So, and with the contour lines on the 1 to 50, you could see the mountains a bit better with the 1 to 50.
Yeah, a few people do that, yeah, because, you know, there's things like, well, there's fewer, in general, there's fewer paths in Scotland. You really are looking at the ridge lines a lot more. And if you look at a 1 to 25,000 map, you just see bits of hand-drawn, beautifully hand-drawn rocky features all over the map. It's just like, you know, wow, too much.
Yeah.
And so, the 1 to 50,000 really sort of just give you what you need there. But I think, you know, in those situations, for me, I would, if there was a Harvey's one, I would very much, certainly in the Highlands, I would gravitate towards those ones, to the Harvey's 1 to 40,000 for that right balance. But yeah, if it was a 1 to 50, I'd be equally at home with that as well in the Highlands.
So these are all really good tips, like knowing like which compass, which map. So we've got such a choice here, haven't we? And I also wanted to, unless you've got any other easy tips for us to be better at navigating.
Just in terms of maps, and just one more thing I will mention, because we've been talking about Harveys, we've been talking about OS, you know, but the Harveys Ultra maps, I mean, it sounds like a salesman here for Harveys, but I'm not really. I'm just sort of, 'cause I just think these are a really nice piece of kit.
They're tiny. You look like a giant now.
Well, there we go. Yeah, it's like a miniature map. And they're 1 to 40,000. Because they're on waterproof paper, you can four of these cover the whole of the Lake District.
And so they're called the Ultra. Are they for ultra running, or is it just the name of them?
No, they're just called
ultra.
the Ultra map.
Uh-huh.
And they're four of these. Cover the whole of the Lake District. So what it means is that, you know, you could just get four of these, and if you're going out for a run in one part of the lakes, one of these, chuck it in your bag, you know you've got a paper map for the area that you're going into. And because they're quite compact, you can easily thumb the map, print it on both sides, just nice and convenient, really, as opposed to wrestling with a great big full-size sheet of paper.
So,
if I could only have, I like to buy a map from you. I've got a little collection behind me there, plus I quite like to, you know, get whatever's needed in terms of maps. But if I could only have one set of maps for particularly set of hills, I'd probably go for those ones there, because they're so handy, really.
They do look really handy. I didn't even know they made such small ones. They look really good, and they look easier to fold over than the OS maps, because they've got that bit of cardboard, the outer cardboard on the OS maps.
They do,
So I end up taking that off, and then I have to write all over the margins of the map what the map actually is, because then I forget what it is. I write its name on itself. And it gets wet. You bend it and it gets holes in it. So, yeah. I also sometimes print off a map, or I take a photograph of the map on my wall behind there, and I just use a photograph of the map on my phone. I do that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a handy thing to have. You know, you've got it. You've got a sort of. It's quick and easy, isn't it? Really, I think if it's quick and easy to do, then it's definitely something that you're more likely to do. But also, I think a lot of people now will have a subscription to an app. OS Maps is quite a popular one, isn't it?
Yeah, and ViewRanger.
Yeah. One thing I would say in terms of printing a map off, though, in the OS Maps app. It's a great, really handy little thing, isn't it? You can, you know, if you're out and about, you can just flick it on. You've got your 1 to 25,000, 1 to 50,000 maps on your device. Really good. I use it all the time, not just for running, but for all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But for you, whatever it is, I think it's about 25 quid a year, maybe 30 quid a year.
It's really good value.
Really good value. But, you know, you've got to remember, you can also print maps off off the same account. So if you were to go onto your computer at home, log on to the same account, you'll bring the desktop up version and the browser, and then you can print off a little section that you need. So instead of having a great big map, you know, you can just print off either A4 or A3 and get it sealed up, a little laminated pouch or stick about plastic, whatever it is, and then you've got a printed map. I find that A3 is a better size, but obviously most people at home, I've only got an A4 printer.
Oh, yeah.
But, if anybody works in, anyone who works in an office, you've usually got an A3 printer knocking around somewhere, or you can go and break into somewhere that does,
send it to a friend.
The facilities of somebody that does have an A3 printer.
Yeah, good idea.
You know, for that, if you're paying the money for your subscription, make the most of it. Use that facility. And then you've got like a nice usable map. But you mentioned ViewRanger, which was the other. Well, I mean, it's Outdoor Active now, isn't it? ViewRanger's been bought out by. It's the same thing. But
I'm behind the times.
but in terms of devices, yeah, you know, with Outdoor Active, you can pay a similar amount, 30 quid a year, and you can. Then upgrade from the basic map, and then you can have OS maps on your Outdoor Active, which is great.
Oh, okay.
But there's one thing you can't do with that, is you can't print them off.
Oh, okay.
So, because ultimately, you know, that's OS data, isn't it, that Outdoor Active, and for whatever deal that they've done, they don't allow that printing facility. So if I had a choice between OS maps and Outdoor Active, I'd probably go for OS maps so that you can have the printing facility.
Yes.
The actual app itself is probably better than the OS one, but you know, having the printing facility for me is more important, I would say. But yeah. we've diverged a little bit into digital stuff there. Which, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, a lot of people are just flicking the phone on. We know that there's a whole host of issues with that. but we do both, don't we? I mean, I'm sure you'll use your paper maps, and then you'll also use your phone as well for certain things.
Genuinely, I don't, apart from photographing maps.
Okay,
I'm quite low tech. I was taught to navigate in the olden days doing orienteering, so I was going to ask you a question actually about using GPXs, because two races I've had them on now and I've not even understood how to use it. So but before we get on to using maps on your watch, what is the best way, because you've given us some really good tips there and we've talked about some really nice different maps and compasses, what's the best way to get better at navigation using those tips that you've just given us there?
The best way is practice, getting out there. I think what I've noticed a lot of people do is they might sign up to an event next year, think, right, okay, between now and then I'll nail the navigation, and then they don't get around to it, and then they start to panic a bit as you get closer. Yeah. No, you know, my advice is just to simply get out there and just start to give it a go. I will also say come on one of my courses.
Definitely.
A practical session is, you know, it's worth its weight in gold. It means that instead of slowly working things out yourself over an extended period of time and not necessarily doing it brilliantly, you know, you can just sort of nail a lot in one hit by coming on a course, and or, you know, anybody, other courses as well, really, just to turn the corner with it. I think that's what I would say. And once you've done that, then keep practicing, you know. I know people have in the past have come on courses or gone on courses with other providers. I thought, oh yeah, that was quite helpful, and then they've not used it for 2-3 years, forgotten everything, and then you're back to square one, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think, you know, getting out there and doing it regularly. I mean, we're quite lucky. You live up North Lake somewhere, don't you? I think.
No, I live in Stamford. That's Rutland Water that you can see behind me there. My map on my wall, and that's Leicester, and that's Rutland Water. Just next that side of Rutland Water, just. Oh, it's backwards, the screen, so I never know which way's up. It's like a mirror, this screen. There, I live just like there, basically, that you can't see.
Right, okay, right. I mean, you've got plenty of countryside around there, haven't you, to go on the trails and what
have
you.
Yeah, and sometimes I find countryside and like little towns and villages harder to navigate in than on the actual mountainside, because on the mountainside, there's like a route, and you go up, and you go up and up and up and up and a bit more up, and then you're at the top, and then you go down. You just have to get the right way down. Whereas in, like, when there's all these fences and you've got to be this side of a hedge or that side of a river, and oh, I just get really confused.
It can be, it definitely can be harder, yeah, because all that detail, you know. I'm sure we've all accidentally navigated into somebody's driveway. Yeah. Sorry.
So, but around here, honestly, some of the paths do start in people's driveways, and then you're like, am I going into their house? And then there's a gate and there's a footpath sign. You're like, oh God, thank God it's there. And the other thing that happens around here is that farmers, they plough over the supposed permissive rights of way a lot. Yeah. So you're like trekking through all this mud, bog, like ploughed field, or you just have to go around the outside. So yeah, they're a bit naughty around here because it's, you know, not like the mecca of hiking around here.
Yeah. So, I mean, but if you've honed those nav skills, you can confidently go over those sort of recently grass cut fields or whatever, as long as you're on the public right of way, and you know, you can start to use them all. You don't necessarily just need to stick to ones that are sort of signposted and what have you.
Yeah, and you can go across without fear of being shot because you're in the wrong place.
I'm having a go at you.
Yeah, I've had that before.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's it can, lowland sort of trail, classic, what you call maybe trail navigation, can definitely be harder. And so, you know, don't go thinking that if you've just sort of gone out on some local trails and you're mindful of thinking you're doing a marathon, you struggle on the local trails, so you say, oh my God, I can't possibly go into the mountains, I'd be, you know, a disaster zone.
Yeah.
It's not the case, you know, you're right, it can be harder. So just sort of give it a bit more practice and build a little bit more confidence, and you know, you'll still get there. And you know, also navigating those local trails is still the same, you know, it's the same skills that you're going to be using out on the mountain. So you know, don't go thinking that if you want to practice for a marathon that you have to go to the lakes or the Peak District or the Highlands to get a bit of practice in before your event in 3 months time. You know, you can you know, get the same sort of things, you know, distance judgment, orientation, thumb in the map. You're going to get the same thing from doing that classic trail navigation in areas local to you. Or if you, even if you're in the city, you know, if you're going to, when I remember years ago when I lived in London, going for a run with the 1 to 25,000 map.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're in the city, maybe going through a few parks, but it is the same thing, really.
Yeah. That's good to know. We can practice it anywhere.
Yeah, and the more the better, really.
Yeah.
That's one big thing is, you know, just get out there regularly.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you've got that little bit of confidence, you know, you're away after that, I would say. Yeah. And, you know, you'll get loads better.
Yeah. And it is a little bit like learning a language or fitness. You kind of, you wouldn't expect your body to just go and run a marathon after no training. So why do you expect yourself to be able to navigate after no navigation practice? So it's like it's training for navigation in the same way that we train our bodies for the run. And with that in mind, I've been training a lot for ultras recently, and I'm finding that I'm using poles a lot. And how on earth will I use a map and poles? How do people do that? Have you got like a swivelly mountain bike mount on top of the pole? How do people cope with map and poles?
You could almost do sort of having an extra set of limbs, couldn't you, really, to do everything. It is a classic issue. More for the ultra runners, as you say, because I think more and more people are starting to use poles as well these days, aren't they?
And I suppose with hikers as well. I mean, hikers are always navigating, aren't they, somewhere? So, hikers, that's what ultra running is for me. It's just a long hike.
Yeah, so I think going back to a few little things that we've talked about before, the choice of compass can be quite important, or certainly how you fasten the compass onto you. I mean, so for me, I use poles as well, but I'm not so much of an ultra runner. I just use them for sort of shorter distances. If I go out for an hour, 2 hour run in the Lake District, I'll quite often have my poles with me. So these little wrist compasses are really quite helpful for that, in that you can use your poles with these as well.
Yeah, I'll get me one of them.
So if I've got that, you know, at least I've got the direction there. I'm not, the map is another separate issue. that is quite helpful. You can wear it over your thumb like that, or you can have it. If I was doing an ultra, where the navigation isn't necessarily that hard, is it, on a lot of these things?
No, and you're going a bit slower if you're using the poles.
So I would maybe tend to wear this one like a watch.
Yeah.
If I was doing like an ultra, and have your watch on, you know, the normal watch on the other side.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got your compass there, and I think if you're doing your own thing, you know, if you organise a map that's not a full size sheet, I think if you've got poles, it's going to be just nigh impossible to use one of these.
Ordnance survey map would be impossible.
I think you need to, you know, get yourself an A3 printout of the bit that you use. But if you are doing a race and you've got an official race map, like say the Dragon's Back, each day you're going to get an official, you know, a new race map, you can just about sort of still have that in your hand. But I think the key thing is have somewhere on your vest that you can stash the map.
Yeah, it's really handy. Yeah.
And very easily. Obviously, when it comes to running vests or waist pouches or whatever it is that you use, you've got to have the necessary race kit. And you're then thinking about gels or access to your nutrition to stop you from falling apart. But where the map goes, super important. And if you are going to use the compass, you know, sometimes people would have their a base plate compass stashed on there. But the key thing is being able to get at it quite easy. And so that you might, with poles in your hand, you could still use a map like this. And you've got your compass out, poles in hand, and I think you need to start to develop your map memory technique. I mean, it is what it says, is that map memory, if you can look at a particular section of the route that you're doing, and then just, you've got to simplify your navigation because you can't remember everything. But if you're following a you know, you can remember three key points about what you've got.
Down to the bottom, left at the stream, up the hill.
Yeah,
past and the style.
Going back to like practice, you know, you'll get better and better at that skill. But if you've developed that map memory, then you can sort of burn it into your mind, put your map in there, and then get your poles out and start powering away.
Yeah, so just like little and often looking at it, and maybe when you're going uphill or
yeah,
like
get in the key points. I mean, the navigation for an ultra is yeah. I mean, the nature of the sport is the distance, isn't it? It's not the fact that you've got to navigate is because it's too much of course to waymark, so you have to have to. But with mountain marathon, the navigation is actually part of the event, and that is sort of the skill in itself. So, you know, the navigation on an ultra is generally going to be
different.
Easier.
And also on ultras, this brings me to my last question, which is about using GPXs on a watch, because most of the ultras are like, follow your GPX on your watch. So I duly downloaded the GPX of the Lakeland 50, put it on this watch, and then in the Lakeland 50, I started it at the start, and then, you know, there was one point where I was on my own, and I looked down at the watch to the navigation bit, and all I could see was a straight line and an arrow on it, and I was like, how am I supposed to navigate from that? And I tried to zoom in, and then it zoomed out again when I next looked at it, and I was like, oh, this is a pile of rubbish. I'm gonna wait for someone and follow them. I did have the map, obviously, because they give you one, but I was trying to be quick about things. I was just wondering what you thought about races saying that you can use the GPX, because I really struggle with it. And do you teach how to use GPS watches? Because if there's no features on it, how am I supposed to use it? Ones with features on, obviously, but it's so tiny. How are you supposed to use it?
It's having it all set up right, isn't it? And having the right sort of data on there. It's a big question. I think a lot of people want to just get a GPX so that they don't have to think about it all. I cover it when I do my courses and we talk about it, but personally, I don't tend not to use them. First of all, they're quite expensive, aren't they? When this, they can work, they can be really helpful, but you know, it's a lot of money. After 3, 4, 5 years, things start to go wrong with them, so you've got to spend a load more money. So I tend not to use them for that reason. If you are going to use them, I think you could do with having spending upgrade to have the OS data or Harvey's data.
Definitely. Otherwise, it's just a breadcrumb trail with an arrow. Use is that? I suppose if you've gone off course, that's useful to tell you. But then how do you get back and how do you know where you are? It's like,
nowhere. I would say, but you know, it might cost a bit to get the unit in the first place. But then the cost of getting the data on there, I mean, it varies depending on the device. And it can cost an arm and a leg to get all the OS data on there. And again, that's where, you know, I find it like a bit too much. Financially to have that, but if you want to do that, you know, my advice would be to get the proper map data on the device as well.
Yeah, so you've got features popping up so that you're using it as basically a tiny tiny map and a sat nav on a tiny tiny map.
Absolutely, yeah, that's it.
Or the phone, like some people, like when I did Cape Wrath Ultra, my friend had ViewRanger when it was ViewRanger back in the day, and she had the actual map on her phone, and it was like a little arrow on there, and it was just like a sat nav for the hills, which was great, like the OS app is. She just had that, and you could see all around her phone, like it was, but she wasn't using that all the time. We were just getting that out to confirm with the map that we were going the right direction if we were ever like a bit worried about the map, but we were basically using the map because it didn't take any battery. So we only turned that on when we were like, oh, we just want to confirm because we're tired and, you know, we really need to go the right way.
That's a really good bit of advice, that Claire. Yeah, just sort of having, you've got it there, you can use it if you need to.
So like a backup, in my mind.
Yeah, it is a backup, but and then, you know, you're not nailing the battery because you're not using it all the time. And also, it can be quite hard and fiddly to use a device.
Yeah,
if you're
especially
using
in gloves.
It to navigate.
Yeah.
For me, I would say it's really useful to help you out if you, as you say, you're knackered, or you've gone a bit off astray. Instead of going through the whole process of relocation, you can just flick it on and say, right, I see what I've done.
And also in the rain, the touch screens aren't great in the rain, are they?
That's it, the touch screen could go. I mean, we know the downsides of these things, you know, battery life, touch screen going, and it works great when you're trying it out, practicing, but then in the reality of an event, you know, it doesn't always work out for you. I think just getting the basic navigation skills under your belt is probably the first starting point to do, and then as to how you're going to use the tech as well as a backup if it's an ultra in a race where you can use tech. You've got loads of choices there, and I would just make sure that if you use the device that you're super familiar with how it all works and getting it all set up before you actually go out there.
That's good advice.
And also remember, I think people sometimes also think that you've got to have the latest tech, but not necessarily. Sometimes the old tech could be quite helpful.
Yeah, like an E-Trex, Garmin E-Trex, like old school, like this big GPX with like actual map on it. That could be quite handy. It's quite heavy.
Yeah.
And
also like just like grid references as well.
All the maps,
even a race map, you've got grid references on there, and so you could use a grid reference finder if you're doing an ultra.
Old school GPSs used to be just the grid reference, didn't they?
I
remember turning it on to just double check that we were in the right place that we thought we were in. Yeah, and it would give you like a six figure one, wouldn't it? Figure one or something like that. I can't remember how accurate it was.
I would probably just go for the six figure one, and then you could put yourself on the paper map.
Yeah.
So, if you're doing an ultra and you've just wanted to use a navigation app just to get yourself out of a bit of trouble, but the rain means that the screen's not working. Well, with a grid reference finder, you can just pull up the info. You've got the info. That's all you need. Turn it off again.
Yeah.
You can use that with your paper map.
Yeah.
So there is loads of different ways that you can sort of link all these things together.
But just using it as a I am here seems to be quite a good way to use it.
Yeah, I think. So it's weighing it all up. I know a lot of people might have a sort of Phoenix 6 or a watch, and they don't want to, all they want really from it is to know if they've gone off route, which you can set it up and have your little beeps to tell you if it's got a bit pear-shaped. Ultimately, you've got loads of options there, basically. I think we want to make sure that we don't get confused by having too many options. And the other thing I would say is that regardless of the tech and the maps that you're using, if you're doing something like an ultra, burning in as much of the route into your mind is worth its weight in gold as well. Because even if you're using a device to keep you on track, using it for navigation a little bit, if you know the shape of the route, the big sort of features, you know where you are, then right from the start, you're building in that map memory that we talked about before to do with the poles. And it's all in here, it's all locked in the map. Handiest storage place, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
you've got the basics of the route, and then you're just using the paper map, compass, your device to help you out, really,
for the finer details. You know that you're generally, like, it's over there on that mountain there, we're heading that way.
And another example about this is somebody not that long ago who was doing a Bob Graham. They had the map segments and even the Harvey's map that we talked about, and organised them a full size sheet of the whole route, big piece of paper, and they thought, wow, this is great, because this does something. It just sort of means that you can start to burn all the detail into your mind, the shapes of the route, where the tricky bits are, the harder bits of navigation, so that's a bit of advice I would say. So if you're doing a
get the overview,
just sort of get it all burnt into the mind as much as you can, and then that's going to give you a really good heads up on the day itself.
Good starter for 10. Awesome. That's been brilliant, thank you so much. I think we've all learned a lot, and I've managed to air some grievances there, so that's been really good. Thank you so much, Sean. We do really appreciate all that advice. It's been most enlightening. I also feel raring to go to pick up a map and plan a new route and practice my navigation right away. That all thanks to you. So just to end up, can you tell us how people can find you online to book a course with you and follow what you do?
I've got my social media up, Dan as the Nav Guy on Instagram and Facebook, I'll be putting some courses up there in the near future, or if you want to message me about any sort of bespoke course, you can generally get me through the Nav Guy. Quick search is gonna pull it up. If I, yeah that so that's the quickest and easiest way, really, is to contact through there and see any courses that I'm going to be having on. And also courses via Mountain Run as well, up in the Lake District. So I do a lot of work with Charlie Sprouse and Mountain Run as well. So that's another option you can book on via there. And yeah, hopefully maybe see some of you out there on one of these courses.
Yeah.
Or yeah, build up that basic nav skills, bit of confidence, and you'll be flying.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Everybody, follow Sean and book onto one of his courses to improve your navigation, maybe make it your winter project. And I just want to read out a couple of live comments, because obviously we had lots of people watching live. So Tadeusz says, thanks, very interesting. Lisa says, lots of useful advice, thank you, and a smiley face as well. And David R said, this was fantastic, thank you both. So yeah, just a flavour of the comments coming through there. So thank you very much, Sean. Have a great rest of the summer, and we'll see you out and about, map in hand, hopefully.
Great, thanks for that.
Bye everyone.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.